Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
So welcome to another edition of On the Continent, your one-stop shop for everything to do with European football. I'm Dotun Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Lars Watson.
On this week's And Finally, Here Come the Euros podcast, we're featuring the group of death because the tournament's not big enough for all of them. We're considering the dark horses, including a Turkish delight and a giddy-up-a-ding-dong East European style. And could Denmark be the long shot that kicks the Euros bucket again? And, oh, did I mention COVID? Well, look away now if you don't want it to rain on the Spanish plain. So here come the Euros!
I mean, Dotun, you are going to have to explain what the diddy up a ding dong or whatever you said.
It's a great song. Giddy up a ding dong, giddy up.
All right, fair
enough. Giddy up a ding dong. But you have to
sound like some sort of Eastern European stag do that I have not been on yet.
I prefer the nod to The Harder We Come, actually. But having said that, we're going to start with this group. I know I can't be calling it the group of death.
It's the group of life.
It's one of my least favourite tournament
because
cliches.
You ask,
group of amazing football.
It might not be that, but it might also be. You ask, is the tournament not big enough for all? Well, the tournament is big enough for all of them. All three of the big countries can go through if we're assuming Hungary lose all their games. But are we assuming that Hungary have actually? I mean, I know they're kind of like the punchline in this group, but they are undefeated in their last 10, which involves, you know, Nation League games against Turkey and in Serbia and this sort of thing. Having said that, I think they'll lose all their games. But,
but they'll do it in front of a full stadium.
Exactly right.
Which is going to be atmospheric.
World champions versus European champions. Who's going to win out of those two? Are they the two that are definitely going through, by the way?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I've heard a lot of people not really make that assumption yet. I mean, maybe there's always a cliche about it's dangerous to underrate Germany. Maybe for Portugal and France it is, but I think for the neutral observer, not so much. You know,
you're pretty down on the Germans, aren't you?
I am. I think the big issues I have with them, Jogi Löw.
That's a biggie.
And the defence. And those are two huge things that are difficult to get past. And, you know, you think that what Löw did in the aftermath of World Cup 2018 to save himself was basically throw Hummels, Boateng and Müller under the bus.
To scrape it back now.
Exactly.
To look under the bus, get like a big shovel and just get the bits back.
I mean,
put
it's
them
like,
together.
It's like McLaren with Beckham to the power of three. Yeah. Or to the power of two, because he's only brought two of them back. But maybe that would have been different if Jerome Boateng would have been fit, because he had a brilliant 19-20 season. I mean, it's quite a climb down. There's a lot of things that don't make sense about Germany. There's a lot of talent there. There's not a great deal of focus. I have serious concerns about them. And if you're going to make a case for them, it's going to be that Leon Goretzka's going to do something amazing. It looks like he's not fit for the first game. Kai Havertz is going to do something amazing. Manuel Neuer is going to do something amazing. And to be fair, if you look at the horrendous amount of goals that Bayern Munich conceded this season, he did have a really good season, and it could have been a very different Bundesliga season if he hadn't been there. I just feel that the quality of France and Portugal is too great for them. But what's so interesting is that the first game in this group being in Munich.
Yeah.
The first game in this group that is in Munich, I should say, between France and Germany, because it has that sense of a huge, you know, a genuine cornerstone of European football.
Oh, right. Okay.
I would not be awfully surprised if France win that with some comfort. I'm not saying that's definitely going to happen, but it wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, and I think, Liz, if we go back to the aftermath of the World Cup in Russia, there was the sense that Germany needs a new direction, you know, that they'd gotten lost in their own sort of sideways passes, and that they need a new direction, a new focus. And you can say you're throwing several babies out with not that much bathwater by retiring those three guys. But I thought it made a bit of sense to draw a line in the sand and say, listen, this has been a great team. We've achieved much, but we have to do something else now, because this we've gotten lost. And then there was this period where they played some games and they were trying to be more direct and more vertical, as we like to say, hit it earlier to the fast forward, which made some sense. But then they had some bad results, and then you go back to playing in a bit more sort of possession-y way. And then earlier this year, they're playing 4-3-3, and then you lose to Macedonia. And then going into this tournament, suddenly the old guys are back, and suddenly you're playing a new formation in the two friendlies. And listen, the way they played against Latvia, I know it's against Latvia, it doesn't really count, but the way they played with the back three of Rudiger, Hummels and Ginter, and Kimmich back on the wing back, which I think is good, not just because he's a great midfielder, but you have no other good wing backs, so you might as well put him there. And Kroos and Gundogan in the middle, Gosens on the left, and then the three of Müller, Gnabry and Havertz. That team, I can see that team working, but the thing about it really worries me that that's the team you stumble onto in the last friendly.
Yeah.
It's not like this has been the plan, and this has been what they've been working towards, and this is what this team is. It's like they've sort of, we didn't find a new direction, we didn't find a new focus, so we're just going to try to put the best players we can find into a blender, and hopefully Yogi Love will figure something out on the night. That feels like how they're going into it, and it could work. Like, there's a ton of talent in this team, but I think it's a rational thing to look at that process and feel like Germany are not coming into this with a head of steam, put it that way.
But what you seem to both be saying, if I'm right, is that Germany are going to come third in this group.
I can imagine that, yeah.
I think so, yeah.
We haven't decided who's going to come first, but it does seem from what you said, Andy, it's going to be France.
I think so, but it's not. There's not a huge gap between them and Portugal. There's a gap, but it's not an absolute chasm. I think that's worth pointing out. I think with France, you know what you're going to get already. A, in terms of the quality that they've got, because we know that. That's self-evident, the fact that they could pick like 50 players, really, of the requisite quality. Mm. The return of Benzema. Then you've got the fact that we know that there's not just the talent, but they know how to actually win a tournament. They know how to play within themselves and grind out a tournament after a hard season, or in the current case, after two hard seasons.
And that's that Deschamps knows
pretty much
how
morphed
to.
Into one. Yeah.
Is it Deschamps specifically who knows how
because,
to grind out?
I mean, we have this discussion in England a lot, don't we, about why doesn't Gareth Southgate let these players off the leash? They have that discussion in France all the time. Like, and you know, they're the world champions. But there's still that discussion of, oh, when we've got this, so many great players, why don't we play more expressive football? Because that's not how you win major tournaments. And, you know, Deschamps has grasped that. Unfortunately for him, as well as having that ability, he has players who will really dig in, and not just Olivier Giroud. You look at the amount of running that Antoine Griezmann has. You have N'Golo Kante. You have Lucas Hernandez. You have so many players like that who are prepared to just grind it out. I think that's super important. And you know what? I look at this field, and I do think it's relatively open. But the thing with France, they've not just got the best squad. They've got the most focused squad. They've got the best idea of what they're actually doing. And they don't actually have to play well to win this tournament.
Mm. That's crucial.
Yeah, I think
that is scary.
I think we forget that. Listen, we all love like freewheeling attacking teams, but they tend not to win the international tournaments because it is a knockout competition. And I maintain to this day that there were some games where they scored some goals, yeah, but France won the last World Cup mainly through not messing up defensively. Like, they messed up at the back less than anyone else, and they had some outstanding individuals who will eventually get you a goal going forward. That was the recipe, right? And I understand when you look at the lineup, then you're hoping, can we not, like, attack more? Because look at all the good attackers. But, you know, that way lies, you know, badness in international tournaments. If we're looking at reasons why France might not win, we do end up clutching at straws because they're so good on the paper. But I guess what I wonder is, with this new formation, they've been playing with the midfield diamond last couple of games, and I guess that is to have that attacking trident of having Griezmann playing off Benzema and Mbappe. I wonder about width a little bit. I wonder about, because neither of the fullbacks are particularly attacking. You know, Benjamin Pavard and Lucas Hernandez both sort of, if the old joke being that fullbacks are either repurposed center halves or repurposed wingers, I mean, both of them are kind of closer to being center halves than they are to being wingers, I would argue.
But they can both come out and have a little go.
They can.
I think that's important. And Pavard has really worked on that side of his game through playing so much right back. And Lucas Hernandez, okay, he's not Teo, he's not his brother. But
and I would actually, in that formation, I would almost rather have his brother.
Yeah,
in that position. And I accept I'm clutching at straws, and given we have a lot to get through, maybe we should just move on. But if we're looking for any reasons to not be optimistic on the French, I worry if it gets a little bit narrow and a little bit stodgy with all those guys. But as you said, it can be narrow and stodgy. It's fine, as long as they don't concede goals and they find one somewhere. And with that front three, they probably will.
For me, the issue is no Matuidi. Such an all-purpose player who played this really weird position where he was, you know, part inside left, part left winger, part auxiliary left back. He's not really replaceable. I think the fact that they were going to replace him with Adrien Rabiot, who is a quality player but just doesn't have the same discipline and energy and just versatility, really, is Matuidi. I think that's a big miss. But I think what's interesting in the warm-up matches is that they've played Corentin Tolisso instead, which gives N'Golo Kante the license to do all his running all over the shop that you referenced last week.
That would be interesting to see Kante more as the sort of shuttler than the holder in the diamond, just because of his mobility, yeah. Moving on, I think looking at Portugal, obviously the squad is terrifying with all the quality that's in that team, it's almost no weaknesses there. But they have pretty much the same discussions about, like, can we not attack some more? And Fernando Santos is, you know, he is who he is. But
they have to play their very best to win the tournament, though. Unlike France, don't they?
Maybe. I think that wasn't the case in 2016. But I think that's the weird thing. The squad is so different from 2016, and you do get the impression that team could veer into the top heavy, especially if they're playing 4-3-3. I think that's a bit of an issue. They're lucky, I guess, with Diogo Jota, who will probably start. They've got the option to morph between 4-4-2 and 4-3-3, particularly if they bring Andre Silva in. But I just think the big issue for them is that, you know what you were talking about with the fullbacks, Lars? They've got the opposite problem, really. Mm. If you call it a problem,
yeah.
In that João Cancelo and Rafa Guerreiro are both two amazing
basically
footballers.
Wing backs, right?
Not even. I think yeah. they go where they like.
Yeah,
you know, really, Guerreiro's better when he's a central midfield player.
And it's the old combination of very attack minded fullbacks and old / slightly slow central defenders, which always worries me a little bit. And I guess we'll get to that when we talk about Italy.
The big issue for them is that they haven't got an form holding midfield player. Mm. William Carvalho's not had a good season. Danilo's oscillated between centre-half and defensive midfielder at Paris Saint-Germain. This has been a weird old season for him there. So quite how they're going to play that, especially if you've got off-the-leash players like Bruno Fernandes and Bernardo Silva in front.
Mm.
I think balance is a possible issue. Look, on paper, terrific. And we saw them this week with a half and half, not even a full team, against Israel, absolutely marmalised them. And the quality of them going forward was fantastic. And obviously, Cristiano Ronaldo probably should have had a rest, played anyway, so he could get closer to Ali Daei's record, and did knock another one off. So he's on 104 goals now. That could be one of the big things that happens in this tournament, couldn't it? Cristiano Ronaldo getting the world record international mark.
Yeah, but although they want to win it, Portugal want to win it. And by the way, just point of order, don't worry about clutching at straws, Lars, because this is the first of our podcast, Euro podcast. At this stage, I think we're all allowed to clutch at straws to make it exciting. But next week will be different.
Arguably one of the best phases of the tournament, where we all made our predictions, and exactly. So far they're all correct. Yeah, like, the brutal reality of football hasn't made us look stupid yet, which it will in the next couple of weeks. We can all sit and have plans. I love this. It's great.
Should we move on to the next? Briefly,
I'd like to ask Andy, what do you think the chances of André Silva getting any game time, just on the basis of this incredible season he's had for Frankfurt? And I know Cristiano Ronaldo is basically a striker now, but if you give him, he does like having someone to play off.
Yeah.
So if you give him a number 9 and he can sort of drift around in that sort of left channel area where he likes to hang out, and then you have Guerreiro coming on the overlap there, that seems like a good balance on the left side to me.
Yeah, if Guerreiro's rented an extra couple of lungs, it could be a goer, couldn't it? But I think, no, it's a really good point. And the fact that André Silva takes care of the physical side of the game so well now since he's been in Germany, I think that's something that lends him to being that sort of foil for Ronaldo. But if we go right back to the start when he was still at Porto, Ronaldo always loved him straight away. He always found him really good to play off. He looks for the pass as well. But, you know, form is convincing.
Mm.
And scoring 28 goals for anyone in the Bundesliga is amazing. Scoring 28 goals for Eintracht
Frankfurt
is incredible.
He
deserves a go.
André Silva must look at like all the hype around Haaland, great as he is, and like, hang on, I scored one more goal than him. Where are my Instagram followers?
But it's safe to say that before, the Portuguese team was still very much built around Ronaldo. It won't be this time around. It can't be, can it?
Well, they've gradually, very, very gradually moved on from there. I mean, in 2016, already there was an understanding that he had to be fed rather than, you know, play the ISO, play the hero ball, be Kobe Bryant. I think now the conversation has actually moved past that in Portugal, where you don't have to say, he's the greatest, he's the greatest, he's the greatest, he's the best player in the world. You don't have to say it every 5 seconds, because there is an understanding that, yeah, he is the greatest Portuguese player of all time, but there are loads of other great players in the team and loads of other players that can go and win them a game.
And also, like, I've dissed him a lot on this podcast this season, and questioned whether he's providing value for money for Juventus and whether he can play in a modern pressing system and all this. But listen, that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a team that's going to be solid at the back, or hope to be solid at the back, play kind of conservatively under Santos. And then the question isn't whether Ronaldo can harass and harry players all day. No one's going to ask him to do that. The question is, when a chance presents itself, which it doesn't do very often in an international tournament, will he stick that one chance away? And there are still very few people on the planet you'd rather back in those situations than him.
Van Basten. Oh, the goal! What a goal! What a schitterend doelpunt! Niet te geloven, zoals hij die bal uit de lucht oppakt in die hoek daar. Niet te geloven. Wat een weergaloos doelpunt.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
So, Lars, you mentioned Juventus a moment or two ago. So it's a good time to, and I know I'm mixing up my Eurovisions here, but it's a good time to say Evviva Italia, or possibly España, or possibly Belgica.
I don't know, but I really enjoy the fact that on a Euro special, you've probably managed to really annoy fans of both Milan clubs and both Rome clubs.
Yeah, good.
Hats off to you.
This is a Euro, so it's not about the clubs anymore. It's about the nations. Let's look at this. These are the other big sharks in the lake, as it were.
I like that.
Italy.
Fish.
Spain. Belgium, with their glorious generation that's been talked about since time immemorial, and the Netherlands. You can never write them off, even though they don't seem to ever win anything nowadays. But where would you go? Because, again, this tournament's too big for all four of them, isn't it, to win?
Yeah. No, out of the four of them, I guess I'm probably the most excited about watching Italy. Just because they're kind of a new fun Italy under Roberto Mancini. They play, and I know we have said that before about Italy, that they're more fun than before. It isn't a completely original idea, but they have played a sort of pretty forward-thinking 4-3-3 formation under Mancini. They've scored a good number of goals. He's calling up sort of, if you look at their midfield, they're good technical players rather than sort of roving warmongers that we've had in midfield for Italy before. And Verratti might be injured, but like Locatelli can come in. He's also a very tidy player. So this is a team that will try to play football much more so than it'll look to stop the opponent. And that hasn't always been the case with Italy. And also, intriguingly, I feel like if they have weaknesses, they are weaknesses that are kind of traditional strengths of Italy's. If you look at the defence, we touched upon it with Portugal. I wonder a little bit, like, it'll be Bonucci and Chiellini most likely, who are still good players, but they have two pretty attacking fullbacks, and particularly on the left, Spinazzola gets forward a lot.
He's fun.
But I always worry, like, centre-halves can go on and be very good for a long time, but as they get older and they lose a bit of pace, what they really don't like is being isolated one-on-one. And if your fullback has run away, that is kind of what happens on the break a lot. So, attacking fullbacks, slow centre-halves is always something that worries me a little bit. But crucially, the big discussion with Italy is probably going to be up front, where they don't, again, the sort of number nine character, such a traditional strength of the Italian national team. Ciro Immobile, great as he has been for Lazio, never truly convinces for Italy. And I guess same with Belotti, who, God bless him, runs a lot, but maybe lacks a bit of that sort of finesse that you look for at international level. So a lot of good ball players in this team, but maybe not the kind of edge in front of each goal that we're used to seeing from Italy.
I think that's the question, really, whether Immobile and Lorenzo Insigne step up from being two of the best players in Serie A to being two of the best players in this tournament. If they can do that, I mean, the quality's there, but if they can do that, then Italy are in business. Because, as you say, Lars, I think the back half of the team, takes care of itself. Goalkeeper, defence, the midfield's unreal. You know, it's one of the best midfields in the tournament, even if Verratti probably will miss that first game, as you say. But, you know, you look at Donnarumma, 22-year-old goalkeeper. He's played 250 games for Milan.
It's unusual.
It's remarkable. And so they have that mix of experience and excitement. And I think even the older players, like some of the other older players, like Insigne and Immobile, as you say, they're relatively young in international terms. And, you know, they've been kind of reborn under Roberto Mancini as well, which is important. A guy who, and I made this point elsewhere, is not one of those big managers who's marking time doing this job until the next big club job comes up. He would have given anything to be the Italy coach. He's been that, and he has made the most of every moment. He's brought so much to it. Remember, they didn't qualify for the 2018 World Cup. So he started from a pretty low point. And since 2018, well, since 10th of September 2018, they've not lost a game. It's remarkable. I had to discuss on radio the other day how the last time Italy lost a game, I was 41 years old. I'm now 44.
but listen,
brutal, right?
But the caveat, and far be it from me to be the sort of wet blanket of the pod. The caveat is they haven't really played anyone good in that period. They haven't played a lot of strong opponents. Mm. And with this new sort of more positive freewheeling Italy team, that's fine. If what you're doing is sort of thwacking Kazakhstan in a qualifier, then yeah, fair enough. Mm. But it will be slightly different here. And again, yeah, I wonder. I mean, of course, you expect them to win the group. You expect them to have a good tournament. But that is one of those things. Will this sort of much more positive front foot Italy work when you come up against stronger teams?
I mean, we're going to find out in the first game. We'll come to Turkey later.
Yeah.
But that is a game fraught with danger. I agree. If we talk about Spain, what a weird start to the tournament they've had.
It's the tradition now, isn't it? You have to have some sort of madness in the Spanish camp.
But they're the new Dutch. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah.
Although, I have to say...
The Dutch are also the new Dutch, I think.
Yeah. I have to say, sacking a coach on the eve of a tournament...
It's hard to beat.
Is hard to beat. I mean, what they have got is they've got a very prepared situation, because just to reiterate, Sergio Busquets, last Sunday night it was announced, had COVID and was being removed from the squad for the moment. This is an issue, A, because of missing Busquets himself. He was the captain after Sergio Ramos didn't make it. Most experienced player, the guy who sits in front of the defence and maps out the game for them. They're kind of, I guess, steering wheel on the pitch, I guess, is the way the Brazilians would describe it. And that's before you get to all the training knock-ons. The fact that all their team have had to do individual training because of contract tracing from there. Diego Llorente is another one who's gone down with COVID. Now, up until 24 hours before the first game against Sweden, they can replace these players. So that's something that's possible. Of course, you already would have had replacements in the squad had Luis Enrique actually picked 26 instead of 24. They were the only team to choose to do that. But, you know, having individual training where the players have to do that in the run-up to the first game, it's like as far from ideal as you could possibly... Exactly. And then...
Sorry, that was...
You have the twist... Very Kanye West. Then you have the twist that because they can't fulfil the fixture... The last friendly fixture with Lithuania on Tuesday, they put out the under 21 team instead, who are amazing and absolutely belt Lithuania. And so now they've got this parallel squad of 17 players who are ready to step in and replace any who fall out with COVID. So after Luis Enrique said, yeah, we don't want to choose 26. We want to choose 24. We want to keep it all nice and tight and, you know, just make sure everyone's involved. He's got the most dispersed training he could possibly imagine. And you get the impression that the Spanish were a little bit on edge anyway, because Luis Enrique is quite a confrontational character. Clearly, there's the non-picking of Sergio Ramos, which I think is, you know, I think anyone reasonable thinks is justified because of injury. Yeah. Exactly. But it does leave an experience vacuum. There's a question over whether he does know his best 11 anyway. Then you've got the friendly against Portugal, the last friendly that the first team play against Portugal last Friday, where you have this bizarre situation with Alvaro Morata, where he's going to play a friendly at the Wanda Metropolitano, the home of Atletico Madrid, who he still, strictly speaking, belongs to. He's booed throughout the game. Mm. Atletico fans chant about how rubbish he is. He misses a few chances. And then he hits a crossbar in the final minute. I still think he could be an interesting player for them. But then you've got that tension. You've got the tension where this journalist about a week ago says to Aymeric Laporte, so how Spanish can you actually be there? Are you really Spanish enough to play for this
team? Graceful.
And so he's got to deal with that. And then yesterday, you have Jordi Alba just unloading everything. So he starts out saying, well, you know what? When we sold Suarez to Atletico, I thought it was a joke. I thought someone must be joking that we gave him to a title rival. But, you know, he shut a lot of mouths and he did great. And you know, whoa. Everyone's really on the edge. That's so much about Spain feels combustible.
So you would say, Andy, that Spain's preparation has been a bit like the sweet aisle of a corner shop that hasn't been restocked in a while. It's no bueno. They've run out. It's a very common problem.
So, good jokes. The issue, though, is that they're under pressure, aren't they? That's the real issue, though, Lars.
Good jokes is very charitable, well, but I'll take it.
No. Everybody enjoyed that. But they're under pressure. They're under pressure. This is why the whole thing does seem a bit disjointed. You know, they don't know their best team. That's shocking, actually, for Spain. And given the number of issues, apart from COVID, that they're having to deal with, to throw that in as well, they're a mess.
So it's difficult to talk about it seriously, not just because of the ramifications of that joke, but also just because, again, all of this stuff has thrown the preparations into the air. Like, if things were normal, if they'd been training normal, no COVID, everything going on, I would be sort of, but also, you know, he's brought in some younger players, like Ferran Torres is coming in, Dani Olmo is coming in, like Pedri's had a great season. Maybe this can be, if not a tournament that Spain goes all the way in, but maybe a starting point for a new sort of generation, the sort of the tournament where you kind of say goodbye to the sort of tiki-taka gods of yore and sort of say, okay, this is where we're going, this is what we're doing. And Luis Enrique has, there have been occasions when you see that he's added a little bit more, because they again, sorry, I'm interrupting myself, they again sort of became like a parody of themselves. If you look at the game they went out of the World Cup in, like, I think
against Russia,
they completed over 1,000 passes. Right, they had extra time in which to do it, but like in that game, they completed more passes than Russia had in their four games before that, like, or up to that. So it was a nonsense. Like, it became, do you know, when they were conquering the world, like, there were some critics who were saying, oh, it's so boring, it's all sideways passes. It wasn't all sideways passes. But watching that game, I saw the Spain team that the sort of haters saw a few years earlier when they were winning. Like, it was nonsense. And it's clear that Luis Enrique has been brought in with a remit to give them more focus, make them a little bit more direct. You know, you got to harness the extraordinary technical qualities that you have in the team. And of course, they're going to keep the ball. Like, you're not going to play, you know, Tony Pulis 50-50 football with Spain. That wouldn't make sense because of the players they have. But make them a little bit more direct. And they have the players to maybe do that. And maybe this can be the start of something at least.
So we've talked about the fake Dutch. What about the real Dutch?
Yeah, let's do the double Dutch, as it were.
How much time do we have?
Well, I've tried to cast Frank de Boer in my mind as a Ramon Domenech, a mocked and diminished coach who perhaps could take his team a little bit deeper than many think possible.
Yeah.
I don't think they've got the hardest group. And I think on top of that, clearly there's no Van Dijk, which is an issue, but there's still a lot of quality in there. Memphis is absolutely flying at the moment, which I think is really important. And he's sort of, we saw in the friendly against Georgia, the beginnings of this little partnership between him and famed anti-vaxxer Wout Weghorst. Maybe that could work. I don't know. I personally think Memphis could play up front on his own. I don't necessarily think that's an issue, but they've got options.
Yeah, it's like it's the easiest thing in the world to make fun of Frank de Boer's misadventures the last couple of years.
I thought you were going to say anti-vaxxer.
Well, yeah. I don't think he's an anti-vaxxer, is he?
No. We're talking about Veghorst.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Does that tar Frank de Boer with the Veghorst brush?
I was hearing his lawyers shouting in my ear.
No, Andy.
I'm sure you want to go there.
Good God. No, but no, it's the easiest easiest thing in the world to look at Frank de Boer's career post Ajax and just make fun of him and say, oh, this terrible man who doesn't last anywhere and was dreadful in MLS and this sort of thing.
There's a lot of bad choices in there.
Yeah.
But
just think, going into the tournament now, it's more interesting to try to look at, okay, but what could be good here than to just make the same old jokes about how bad he's been and to see what is good about this team, what could work. And I think this thing, he's been annoying a lot of people in Holland by playing a 5-3-2 sort of formation. But I can see the logic behind that. Because if you look at the squad, what they don't really have is great wingers. Like you associate the Dutch with great wing play. But if we accept now that Memphis is more of a forward than a winger, which I think if you ask him, he'd say that's what he is, they don't really, there's no wide players there, but you look, this guy has to be in the team. So, okay, we can live without the wingers. That's not our strength. Maybe think about playing wingbacks because it allows you to play Wout Weghorst and have a proper number nine next to Memphis up front for him to play off. You still have that trio in the middle of Frenkie de Jong, Wijnaldum, and probably De Roon covering for them, which will give them license to go forward. And you have a back three. You have an extra center half, which in the absence of Van Dijk is maybe not the worst idea in the world. So there is a logic behind this formation, whether the Dutch like it or not. And I don't know, there are the ingredients there for a good team. I completely understand, and anyone who looks at Frank de Boer as a coach and has very little faith in his ability to find that team and get the best out of it. But I'm also think it's mean and unnecessary to sort of write him off and write them off entirely.
Let's talk about the Belgium team. And every tournament, you expect this generation of Belgian players to do something amazing. Not only do they have, you know, one of the greatest footballers in the world in De Bruyne, but also, you know, on his day, once upon a time, Eden Hazard, not to talk about the great season Lukaku's had in Italy and so on. Where can they go wrong? But they always seem to go wrong. Is it their aging defence?
Well, it's a good question. And you were talking about, you know, we seem to say every tournament, is it going to be for this generation? I've got good news for you. No one will be saying this after this tournament because this generation is coming to its end. It's got to be now or never. I think that's the thing for them. I would expect them to win the group. I would expect them to go further. Almost with Belgium, because they've shown what they can do in the back end of competitions before, and whether we're talking about the failure against Wales in the quarterfinals in Euro 2016, or whether we're talking about them falling really quite agonisingly short against that France defence in 2018 in Russia, we just need to know that little bit more. Almost, they can be brilliant in the groups and it's not really going to tell us anything. I think that's the issue. The defence, I do have a concern about, because they are so old. And I think you look at the wing-backs as well. Carrasco's had a brilliant season for Atletico. I think Lars and Roberto Martinez worked on that plan extensively over several coffees.
Got him on speed dial.
a Jason Derulo concert. But on the other side, Thomas Meunier has had a really quite dreadful season with Dortmund and they're still reliant on him to do something. Then you have the questions over De Bruyne and Hazard, and I think one of the big triumphs of Roberto Martinez's reign that he's not really got credit for is the fact that he's managed to let two players who should be ringmasters coexist in the same team and get the best out of them. That is not easy, and he's done really well. De Bruyne, of course, is going to come back and he's going to be great. I think there's so much pressure on him and Lukaku, though, who has had an amazing season, an absolutely amazing season. He's a player who was already a great player, who's been transformed and has gone up several levels. I think he would be a good shout to be top scorer for this tournament, and I think he could really fill his boots in this group.
I think you've got a point there. He looks as if he's really enjoying it.
Oh, this
well.
Is his time. Yeah, exactly. I mean, we talked about Donnarumma before. I mean, just to underline about Lukaku, and again, an early starter, 60 international goals. He's only 28, which is amazing. The question for me is Hazard, because he is a player who could take them up a level further. The issue there is, what are we going to get out of him? Do you get a good 90 minutes out of him? Do you get a good 70? Do you get a good 30 or 20? We just don't know because he's been so inhibited.
I mean, I would almost be tempted to just not play him much,
right?
And let Carrasco and Dries Mertens take those wide positions when De Bruyne's not, and actually use De Bruyne in one of those attacking positions with Carrasco or Dries Mertens on the other one, And then I guess you can give him like half an hour against Finland or something. But just based on what he's done for his club side, we don't have the benefit of watching him in training. Maybe he's looking very sharp and hungry and not in that way in training going into the tournament. That is possible. But I just think based on what he's done for his club side on the last year and based on all the injuries he's had, I know he has been a huge player for them. That's not the area of the pitch where they're in trouble. Like, there are other really good options who have had much better seasons.
Yeah, speaking of their old man defence, though, I probably should say, in defence of Jan Vertonghen, played more minutes than anyone else with Benfica this season.
Yeah, I heard that. I actually heard that stat because
he should have the summer off, really.
Well, no, he's an old Tottenham boy. You know, he knows how to put a shift in.
And he's good. He's had a great career, but like the guy's not very fast anymore.
Yeah. But maybe they don't need the speed. What you said about Hazard, though, and I take it that you have got Roberto Martinez on your speed dial, but.
That is a joke, by the way.
It would take a brave,
I really don't.
It would take a brave coach to leave out. What is essentially, like De Bruyne, a national hero in football?
Maybe, but I also think you can just say the guy hasn't been fit all year. Like, I have other good options. I think that's a completely respectable position to take. But I completely also understand why you would want to give him every chance to rediscover some kind of form. But it's a long time since we've seen Eden Hazard be Eden Hazard now. That's just the reality of it.
Ja, man kan virkelig se, at tyskerne passer på, har lukket alt totalt af i deres eget forsvar. De har ikke meget plads, og derfor er det flot, at de spiller sig igennem. Er der klar, at komme ind på midten, og der kommer John Jensen. Ja! Jutlehut! Nej. Jamen.
Of course, when we talk about tournaments, there's always some dark horses to talk about, potential surprises looking ahead, and I can't resist. The Turkish Delight I'm talking about. And given that they have such a strong league, I can't understand why Turkey is not always up there as a serious contender when it comes to tournaments.
You know, you took me back there. I was thinking of one of the first times I did a game from the commentary booth at the old White Hart Lane. You used to have to go round the back of the stand opposite the main stand, and there was this metal spiral staircase that was covered in bird shit that went all the way to the top. And once you'd made your way to the top, you were so isolated, you were so high up. But at half time, a little old man came up with a bottle of R. White's lemonade and some genuine Turkish delight and gave it to us. It was magnificent.
R. White's.
Other lemonades That's are available, apparently.
Tottenham for you, through and through.
But look, I think there's a huge amount of excitement in Turkey at the moment because they feel that they've got their best squad for a generation, maybe more. Of course, a lot of Premier League watchers will look at the defence. Soyuncu, Ozan Kabak, who probably won't start, Meri Demiral of Juventus will start instead of him. You've got Zeki Celik. The Lille right back has been brilliant all season. I'll be not surprised at all if someone big picked him up. Burak Yilmaz, another one of the Lille players. You have this Turkish triumvirate with him and Yusuf Yazıcı in midfield. And Burak has been amazing this year. And it's not just the goals. It's not just that he's scored the goals that's taken Lille to the championship. His all-round game is better than before. You know, people who have followed him in Turkey for years like think he's an unrecognisable player. Mm. And, you know, he's a better player at 35 than he was at 28, 29, which is remarkable. And he had that little break in January, February when he was injured. And I think that little breather gives him more of a chance of being really effective in these Euros. He's faster than you think at that age. I think he poses a real danger to Italy. And you were talking about speed and how that might be an issue for them, especially without covering fullback. I think that'd be an interesting theory to test against Italy, Lars. Also, you look at those big guys in defence and how they could contribute from set pieces. The delivery from Hakan Çalhanoğlu and Yazıcı is something else. So you've got a lot going for Turkey and, of course, a coach in Sinyal Güneş who took them to a World Cup semi-final in 2002 in his first spell.
I guess with Turkey, a lot of good players on paper, And some good results in reality as well. Yeah. Obviously, tonking Holland at home and beating Norway, by the way, the much heralded Norwegian team in which they were so much better than us. I mean, we were lucky to get out of that with a 3-0 defeat. That could have been really ugly. Proper men against boys stuff in midfield in particular. But then they draw 3-3 with Latvia. Which there's no excuse for under any circumstance. So I don't understand why these things happen, Andy. And you know this team better than me, but they just seem to have occasional days when it all just goes wrong for completely inexplicable reasons.
Yeah, and you know we can talk about public expectation. They're one of the countries that are most fettered by that. You know that there is huge reaction and overreaction to everything the national team does. So maybe that's an issue. I do think it's interesting that they're not at home to prepare. I think maybe that makes a difference. They're in Azerbaijan preparing, and like most of these teams, of course, are at home, with what the exceptions of Wales, Portugal, and a couple of others.
Yeah, it is interesting that point, because when you look at Turkey, like you've touched on it, Dalton, 80 million people, an incredible passion for football. I mean, you could argue that historically this country has underperformed a lot, not just internationally, but even on the club stage. There should be a more, you know, dominating sort of footballing culture in the world. There's so much passion there. Just ask Alexander Sørloth and his Instagram account. I don't know if you're across this story.
He had to stop people spamming him to come back to Trabzon, didn't he?
Yeah, Alexander Sørloth, formerly of Trabzonspor and now misfiring a little bit at RB Leipzig, posted a completely sort of banal photo of him jogging in a Norway training kit, sort of like, yeah, internationals, baby. And he got 3 million comments.
Not bad.
Which is not normal. I don't know how up you are on social media. 3 million comments is big for Sørloth. It's definitely more comments than he usually gets. And they were all Trabzonspor fans. So he had to tweet, please, like, I appreciate this, but leave me alone. He also had to change his phone number because they got a hold of that as well. So his WhatsApp went mad.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. But the point being, I guess maybe that sort of pressure, like you say, can be an issue as well. Yeah. Draw against Latvia, lost home and away to Hungary last year in the Nations League. Like stuff like this is just weird when you look at the quality in the team. So fingers crossed, I guess that's the thing. Like whether you reach the semi-final or not, like, it depends on the luck of the draw. It depends on who you come across. What you really want to see from a squad like this is that they go into the tournament and play as well as we think they can do. And then the chips will fall where they will.
Yeah, I think that's... Sorry, I was just going to say, I think that's the interesting thing with the development of Turkish football. When you think that their first major tournament is Euro 96, then they get to the World Cup semi-final in 2002. There's no gap between that at all. Mm. And then when you fail to hit those unreasonable heights afterwards, there's overreaction. Mm. And, you know, you add that to quite a combustible football culture anyway. That's difficult. I mean, talking of rebuilding, though, the Czech Republic, I think, are an interesting dark horse because we talked about the early part of the 21st century. They should have won Euro 2004. Mm. You know, let's get that straight. They're amazing. I'm not suggesting this is quite the same vintage as then, and in fact, nowhere near. But if you look at the spine from Slavia Prague, and you can kind of include Socek and Soufal, who've done so well at West Ham, to that because they came from there as well. Then you throw in Jankto, Patrick Schick, players who are, you know, we talked about Belgium being a bit older than you think. I mean, those two guys are 25 now. Mm. They're not young players who deserve to be mollycoddled and earmarked as stars for the future now. They have to start producing something now. I mean, do you think they could do anything in that group?
I don't know. I find them hard to analyse because they've got quite a lot of players who play in the domestic league still. And I'm very big. I keep repeating this in my other sort of pre-Euro work. You should never write anyone off just because they don't play in a big league. We've got so many examples of that being stupid. But it does mean it's harder for us to sit and assess them because we don't watch them a lot. We only see them now and again in Europe. Now, of course, Slavia Prague have had some really good European adventures, famously this season knocking out Leicester and knocking out Rangers, but also 2019 and knocking out Sevilla that time. Mm. So it's happened twice now with Slavia Prague. Clearly, that's not a fluke. Clearly, there's good players there. And I guess I can say I'm looking forward to seeing the team because I find them harder to get a read on. I am also... You push for time, but I'm going to press on.
I am excited about Denmark. I think Denmark could do well in this tournament, because we've talked about it earlier and we're coming full circle here. What usually serves you well in a tournament is being solid, not messing up at the back, having a solid base, and then you get the goals, whether it's from set pieces or penalties or wherever you can find the goals. If you look at this Danish team, you've got Kasper Schmeichel in goal. Simon Kjær has had his best season of his career, I would argue, at Milan. Andreas Christensen is back in the action of Chelsea, so he's coming in nice and match fit. In the midfield, Thomas Delaney of Dortmund and Pierre-Emile Højbjerg from Tottenham, really beefy sort of central midfield who'll sort of run around and kick people all day. And then you've got Christian Eriksen, who's been back in the frame at Inter, which means A, he'll be in decent nick, but also he's kind of had a break by just being out of the team for a while. So
he's played really well as well.
So physically, he should be in a much better place than quite a lot of other players at this tournament, I think.
And they're playing at home.
Yes, they've got group games at home. So I just think the concern is up front. I mean, Yusuf Poulsen and Martin Braithwaite will start, I'm sure. Those are good players, but maybe not sort of notorious thoroughbred goal munchers. But then who the third is, I genuinely don't know. Spoken to someone in the Danish media, they don't really know. It might be Jonas Vind from FC Köln. It might be Kasper Dahlberg, who's not had a good year. So we're not where the goals are coming from. I'm not quite certain, but there really is a really solid core there in that team. And I think if they get, you know, if they get some breaks and the draw is kind to them going forward, I think they could do well.
You guys nearly got through all of this Mammoth Europod without going full Scandi enthusiasm on me. I'm impressed.
Because there's no time for me to just go talk about Finland, which I could do for hours and hours and hours. And God bless them. They're in the tournament. I am excited.
And I've been saying Lars all the podcast, so you didn't think that was going to make it.
That's true.
So finally, with this feast of football ahead of us with the Euros, we ask both of you to recommend a game of the week. You've got too much choice, actually. Your cup runneth over.
Really does. I mean, Scandi bias time, obviously Denmark-Finland is the highlight of my weekend, but I mean, I can't in all seriousness say that it's the game that has the most sort of repercussions for the tournaments. That is a hard case to make. I'm really interested. I mean, I might be stealing Andy's pick now, but Turkey-Italy, just because Turkey, it's kind of everyone's dark horse, because you look at the team sheet and we've talked all about it. I won't spend more time on it, but it's so much exciting stuff there. And this Italy team, who are fun Italy, but again, they haven't played a lot of strong teams under Mancini. And does it work when they come up against the sort of solid block of Turkish delight there? We don't really know yet. So I'm really interested in how that game pans out. And I think it might tell us something about both teams.
Andy?
Obviously, I should go for France-Germany on Tuesday, but you're going to be watching that
anyway. Can we pick a game from Tuesday? That's not game. It's the game of the weekend, isn't it?
Our
Come
weekend.
On, Andy.
The thing is,
going rogue.
There are so many games. It's difficult to know what the rules are anymore.
So that's why I didn't go for that one.
I'm going to go for Netherlands versus Ukraine on Sunday night at 8 o'clock. If you still feel like watching football, England fans, depending on what happened against Croatia earlier, I think it'll be really interesting because the Netherlands need to get off to a good start. I'm quietly optimistic that they will win the group. However, Ukraine are not to be, they're to be reckoned with, I think is the way to put it. Shevchenko has done a really great job there as coach. They got 4 points off Portugal in the group, finished above them. Beat them in Kiev with 10 men. They've got a lot of interesting players. Of course, you know all the regulars, but I would say as well, you have to look at Ruslan Malinovsky in midfield, who's been great for Atalanta in recent months. Roman Yaremchuk, who's been scoring a lot of goals in Belgium, who I think will have a very good tournament, probably get bought by someone in a more storied league. I think this is quite a difficult game to call, and it'll be very exciting.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.